This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, two notorious homosexuals, Tass and Macca. Who's our next guest?
Another notorious homosexual, I think.
We should actually stand for Liberal pre-select and then we could be called Notorious Homosexuals.
Create a party, why don't you, Macca?
That's right, the Notorious Homosexuals Party. That'd be all right. Just get a lot of members.
I'm not sure that our next guest wants to be known as a notorious homosexual. Do you, Adam?
No, I have no problem with that.
Adam Carr, our resident psephologist, our own community's psephologist, is joining us again, as he has been every week leading up to the very election. Adam, last week we agreed that we would talk about the Senate and what might be occurring there. But before we go into that, I'd be very interested in you just helping us to understand what happens when a candidate resigns in the middle of the election
campaign. Resigns from the party. They can't actually withdraw.
Well, that's a bit that I would like Adam to explain to us.
We've seen a number of candidates either withdraw from their party endorsement or be disendorsed by their party. Now, all these things have happened after nominations have closed. So those candidates remain on the ballot paper. They will still be identified as party candidates. The three Liberals who have been disendorsed will still appear on the ballot paper as Liberal candidates, and the Labor candidates will still appear as Labor candidates, and the One Nation guy will still appear as One Nation, and lots of people will still vote for them because people don't follow the news as closely as we do. I don't think people will be handing out how-to-vote cards from those parties, although they still want Senate votes, of course, in those electorates. I'm not sure how the parties are going to handle that, but they can't be withdrawn from the ballot paper. They're still valid candidates. The only way you can get off the ballot paper after nominations close is to die.
So what happens if one of those candidates then gets elected?
They're elected.
They would be an independent. It would then be up to the party to decide whether to readmit them or not. I don't think there's much chance of that. None of them were in seats they were expected to win.
Ah, I see what you mean.
This brings to the question, Adam, briefly. You know, we've raised this with Michael Kroger before, once before, just after the state election, and last time we spoke to him, about the vetting of candidates. Now, you know, you've been around politics a long time. You know, you've met many candidates for many parties, for many seats. It seems...
Well, in the age of social media, unfortunately, vetting of candidates is becoming both more important and more difficult because candidates now leave a long trail of social media commentary behind them, and these have to be, if the parties don't investigate their candidates' social media history, you can be sure the opposition is going to.
Because it seems to me, Adam, that, you know, look, political parties, you know, are always tight on resources, but there's always lots of volunteers and lots of things happening. That, you know, when Michael Kroger, when he acknowledges that it's incredibly difficult, or, you know, that they don't have the time, or the ability to vet candidates. You know, what this says to me, yeah, I realise how difficult it is and how time-consuming it can be, but hang on, you're putting this person up, you're endorsing this person to represent your party in that electorate, and you want people to vote for them, and you can't actually be bothered properly researching their past.
Well, the problem with that is, I mean, I think both the major parties, at any rate, do try and thoroughly vet their candidates, but it relies on candidates to some extent acknowledging things that they've said or written in the past. In the cases that we've just been seeing, the three Liberals were all disendorsed for expressing extreme views about Muslims, about women, about gay people, and that was also the case with the Labor guy in the Northern Territory. The case of Luke Creasy, on the other hand, is stupid stuff he said quite a long time ago, but still unacceptable, but it didn't express his current views. So there are some slight differences in these cases, but you're right, the parties have a duty to vet their candidates properly, but it's much more difficult than it used to be because social media is so expansive. And once you've put something up on social media, it's very hard to get it back again.
It is, yeah. It just seems to me... you know, it's very...
It's just a sign of the times, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a slap in the face to voters.
Well, we haven't worked out how to deal with it yet, Macca.
Well, it's quite easy. You've got to, you know, you've got to allocate the resource to do it.
The other point to make here is that the three Liberals who were whose extreme views were exposed were apparently, I read, those details were leaked by people from within their own parties as part of the ongoing Liberal Party factional warfare, particularly that's going on in Victoria. That I don't think that is the case on the Labor side. I don't know about what's going on inside One Nation.
Well, who does?
No.
So, Adam, anyway. let's move on to the Senate. Tell us what's happening in the Senate. What can we expect to happen on the 18th of May?
Well, as you will recall, last time, the last election was a double dissolution. So all 76 senators were up for election, 12 from each state, and they required a quota of 7.6% to get elected, which is not all that hard to do. So we got a very disparate Senate. At the moment, we've got 31 coalition, 26 Labor, 9 Greens and 10 crossbenchers. So this time, it's a half-Senate election, which means the states are electing 6 senators each. So the quota is now 14.3, which is much harder to get to.
So how do we decide which half gets a stand?
Of the 12 senators elected in each state at the last election, the first 6 elected in each state got a 6-year term, so they're not up until 2022. The second 6 elected in each state got a 3-year term, and they're the ones we're electing now. So on the whole, these are the B team, because all the top senators, you know, Penny Wong and Matthias Cormann, they got elected in the top 6, so they're not up again for another 3 years. So this is mostly the B team senators. senators who were not at the top of their party tickets who are up for election this time. There are 6 of the 9 Green senators are up for election, and I think about 6 crossbenchers are up, and I expect probably quite a lot of them are not going to get re-elected. Mm. So we'll see a somewhat different Senate next time. Now, neither of the major parties is going to win a majority in the Senate. The coalition would have to pick up 8 seats, Labor would have to pick up 13 seats.
How can you confidently say that? How can you confidently say that, Adam? What's your basis for that?
Well, to win 13 seats, you've got to win 2 seats in each state, an additional 2 seats in each state. Yeah. So clearly that's not going to happen. There's only 6 senators up in each state. So Labor can optimistically hope to get 2 quotas in each state. The question then is, can they win a 3rd seat in any given state? In most states, to do that, Labor would have to defeat the Greens senator in order to win 3 seats. Mm. But that doesn't alter the overall left-right balance in the Senate. The real question is, can the combination of Labor and the Greens and other left-of-centre senators win a majority? And that's the live question. We go back to the situation we had after the 2010 election, where Labor and the Greens between them had a majority and were able to support the Gillard government and pass, you know, the carbon price and other legislation. If Labor wins the federal election but faces a hostile Senate, then we go back to the Whitlam era, which was the last time we had a Labor government facing a seriously hostile Senate.
So, Adam, much has been said about candidates like, or people like Fraser Anning, who got elected on a handful of primary votes.
No, he was elected because the other guy was ineligible.
Yes.
Well, One Nation in Queensland last time got 1.5 quotas. So they got Pauline Hanson and Malcolm Roberts elected on the after preferences. They got to 2 quotas. Roberts was then knocked out over his citizenship, and Fraser Anning, who'd been number 3 on their ticket, then got his spot. So the number of primary votes he polled is irrelevant. The Senate is not elected on primary votes. It's elected proportionately and after preferences. Anning is now running for his own party, and I don't think he's got any chance of getting re-elected. Malcolm Roberts could come back for One Nation in Queensland. I mean, he's not quite as outspoken as Fraser Anning, but he's still pretty weird. Some crossbenchers will stay, some will go. I don't think, like Darren Hinch, for example, to get to 14%, I think will be a big ask for him.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Jackie Lambie in Tasmania could come back. Sky Kokoski-Moore, the Xenophon senator, who also was kicked out over his citizenship, could come back. So there will still be crossbenchers in the new Senate, but I don't think there's going to be nearly as many. And the Greens are at risk of losing some of their seats too.
Give us your final analysis. Where do you think it might land?
I think, well, if the polls are right and we're going to see a substantial swing to Labor across the board in the House of Representatives election, that usually flows through to the Senate. I expect Labor will pick up maybe one or two seats. The Greens may lose one or two seats. But I think the chances that there are a combined Labor, Greens, left of centre crossbench majority for Labor's key legislation are fairly good. But this is, you know, this is very inexact. It's hard enough to pick the results in the House of Representatives. The Senate is a good deal harder because it depends on preference flows. The other thing that's changed is, of course, the old system, you just put a one in the box and your party allocates your preferences automatically. That's been got rid of.
Yeah.
You now have to pick six boxes above the line or 12 boxes below the line. You decide for yourself where your preferences go. That means preferences won't flow nearly as strongly as they used to do the last time there was a House Senate election.
So it might take weeks and weeks before we actually have a final result.
That's the reason why the election had to be held before the end of May, because it takes a good 6 weeks to count 16 million Senate votes and distribute all those preferences.
And the
new Senate has to be in place on the 1st of July.
That's right. Yeah, new senators take their seats 1st of July, Tess.
That's right.
Yes.
So the chances of something like Whitney Muir, you remember, who was elected for the Motor Enthusiasts Party with sort of 0.2% of the vote, the chances of that happening again now are very small because parties can't do the kind of preference allocation deals that they were able to do. That's why the system was changed. So it will be harder for minor party senators to get elected. They'll have to have high name recognition, as Darren Hinch does, as Jackie Lambie does. And that's what Fraser Anning is trying to do. That's why Fraser Anning is being so outrageous. He's trying to create name recognition for himself. So when people go to the polls in Queensland, they will vote for him. Now, I don't think it's going to work, but that's clearly his strategy.
Well, that can clearly work one way or the other, can't it?
Well, yeah, of course, it arouses a lot of negative feelings about Anning as well. But he and One Nation and Bob Catter and the rest of them are all competing, as we've talked about this last time, are all competing for the same 10% of the vote to the right of the coalition, which One Nation had to themselves until recently, but now they're competing with Catter and Corey Bernardi and Fraser Anning and the Shooters and the whole range of parties competing for that right-wing segment of the vote. And Anning is trying to get ahead of One Nation in Queensland in order to grab that spot.
As we said last week, it's really interesting that all that competition is on the right of politics, on the left of politics.
There's very little serious competition on the left.
It's Labor and the Greens.
Apart from the competition between Labor and the Greens, which is pretty intense sometimes, but there's not much else on the left. Mm. There's the Animal Justice Party and the Reason Party, which used to be the Sex Party. But I think they don't have much chance. It really, if you are a left-inclined voter, your choice really is between Labor and the Greens. Yeah.
Adam, we're out of time. We're, of course, looking very forward to your penultimate contribution next week before the election in 2 weeks' time. Thank you, as always, for your time and for your insights. And keep up the great work.
Okay.
Cheers. Thanks, Adam.
See you next week.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.